Visual Logic PC Gaming Podcast. Once again, we're calling this one a do-over. Last one didn't go so well. We had a few technical
problems. I was drunk.
Yeah, we had a little intoxication over here. But yeah, so I'm Robert Digital. I'm here with Ender's Logic. And again, our new guy, Flopsy, a.k.a. Chad. Let's get to know him. So what kind of games are you into?
I like the MMO, RPGs, the occasional sports now and then. And first-person shooters, of course, like everybody else.
Sports, okay. So is that like...
Name a sports game you've played. I can't name one.
I like Madden's.
So are we talking
about... I guess so.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. By the way, this is our resident console tard.
Yeah. I don't think consoles are as bad as we make them out to be.
Except they're inferior for the same price, so that's pretty bad.
In my defense, I play PC games pretty much 95% of the time.
The funny thing, I brought it up on the podcast many a time, where you have access to so much free content, full games, because they're on the PSN, and we still go into our rooms and play our respective PC games.
Yeah, because I think console units are more disposable games, where you play it for a couple hours and you're finished with it. Whereas a lot of PC games you can play for hundreds of hours, like you know, from WoW on down. So
yeah,
I think
guess that makes a lot of sense. Yeah,
I think I get hooked on games that I play on the PC, and so I end up just playing those for hours on end.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I think that's what you see with PC gamers a lot more, is they have one specific game that they're connected to, and that's all they play.
Yeah, that happens more a lot than it does in... You're totally right, because console gamers are like, next big title, next big title, next big title.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? We're all still playing TF2 to some extent,
yeah.
You know? And it's been years.
Yeah.
So
now, this game that we want to talk about here is exactly that case. It's one of those games that I think people are going to be playing for a very, very long time. So we all had a chance to really dive into Rust this last week. And first of all, how do you feel about paying $20 for this? Like, do you think that's a fair price?
So, just so it's clear, is that $20 now all the way through? Once it goes live, I'm good? Or is that $20 just for early access and then I'm paying full price once that goes live?
No, that...
If you buy it now, you get it forever.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's how every game has ever been. As far as if you buy it in alpha, you're good all the way until... So, right now, not worth $20 by any means. Well, I don't know. I'll tell you about later about my little story that I had. I had a really good time. But right now, probably not. You know, I would have been comfortable with maybe $10. I know the semantics, $10, $20. But that's half, I would say about half of what I paid would be about right for what we did, which was I think I have $10 logged in since last time I played.
Yeah.
$20 is pretty expensive when you think, well, I don't know.
As far as Steam goes.
It really depends on who you're talking to. But $20 I consider to be a little expensive for this type of game, but alpha access games tend to be a little more expensive.
Yeah.
So I'm not really surprised at the price, honestly.
Maybe this is my console roots coming back, but $20 for a full title seems like a reasonable price to me. Like,
yeah, for sure.
Like, if I'm going to get 40 hours of gameplay out of this, you know, I think that's a good investment.
Yeah. But PC gamers, I think, are a lot more frugal than console gamers, just because I think we're used to getting a lot more shit for free, honestly.
Yeah.
And not to say, I guess we're jaded, I guess. Mm-hmm. But as far as the way it looks and where it is as far as development, right now it shouldn't have been $20. Maybe a different kind of format where you pay down $10 now for access, like what you were talking about. I don't know. I'm not completely upset that I spent $20 on it. We had a great time, I think, for one day, did we
not?
Yeah,
and the way I look at it is, this is basically a Kickstarter, only they're kickstarting it with the access.
Yeah.
You know, it's a Kickstarter. Basically, you're paying a $20 Kickstarter to get the game that you want to play.
Yeah.
So the fact that I can do a Kickstarter and get to play it as soon as I do it, I'm down with that idea.
And the model's working because they have... It's hugely popular. I think it's number 8 on Steam, and it can only get better from here. They're listening to the community. The game's getting better by what the players want in, you know, they're putting in what players want. And so it's going, the developers are growing with the players, and the end product should be amazing. Right now it's fun. It should be amazing.
And the developer you're talking about is Gary, right?
Yeah, he's one of the guys. There's a couple other dudes, but yeah, Gary from Gary's Mod.
Yeah, it's Space Punch Studios, which I think was started by him, or at least he's the heart of.
Well, what exactly is Gary's Mod, in case some people don't know what it is?
So Gary's Mod was a Half-Life 2 mod where you didn't really play anything originally for the first, I don't know, I would say 4 years. It's been out for 9 years. And by the way, Rust made more money in the first 3 months than Gary's Mod has in 9 years. Yeah. But, you know, Gary's Mod was like, at the most, I think it was $5. Mm-hmm. And most of the time they give it away free in packages or whatever. But basically you could use the modelers, the developers' modeling abilities and kind of do animations with the characters in-game, in a fake game. And a strange, you know, your own playpen that you could do anything, but there wasn't a game. Mm-hmm. It was just for not even texturing. It was for posing and making animations and making weird, like the strangest thing I ever did was I put 4 compressed air canisters tied to 4 limbs of the gray man and then tied his cock to the ground. So he's got a string connected to the ground, and 4 air canisters just blowing every and so it's like interpreted dance in a way, and it was fun, man. It was really, really fun.
And people still play this game, right?
For sure. Oh, and so now I think most recently in the last 3 years, I would say you're talking about a 10-year span now. In the last 3 years, it's become multiplayer, so you can build shit together. And not only can you build shit together, but people have modded Gary's Mod. So now, you know, you all look like Velociraptors or whatever you want, and you can make a slalom course and just go slalom down on top of King Kong's. Like, you can do anything you want in this game. It's what it is. It's whatever you want to do with your imagination, I guess.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it's like a big playpen. It's fun. It's got a strong following, too. But, yeah, Rust is the new project that he's working on, and it seems to be really taking off. I mean, despite the price, if you think that's high, then, you know, if people think that's high, regardless, they're buying it and they're playing it. And, yeah, the alpha thing, you know, have you guys ever bought an alpha and then had it come out? Like, have it actually have a legitimate release? Because I don't know if I have.
I don't think I have either. There's so many of them.
Yeah.
And yet, like now,
does Smite
it's a
count?
New thing, you know?
Smite was in beta.
Beta when they came out,
but
technically.
I feel like this whole alpha thing is just like a giant, like, ploy. Like, we're all being suckers. Like, these games are never coming out. We're just going to have, like, half-working versions of them for years and years.
Well, a lot of them do the kind of, like, the soft launch where it goes alpha, beta for a while, and then all of a sudden it's like, okay, we were final 6 months ago, and we're just, like, making changes at this point. You know, like, they never have, like, because I feel like Smite's doing the same thing. It's like there's no, like, magic gate that opens up and suddenly it's like final. It's like they just continue doing it until it iterates far enough that they consider it final and are good to go.
But Smite is feeling patch. Much more like a AAA title at this point.
And I think Rust will follow a similar strategy.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, let's talk about the gameplay. Like, what is this game actually like?
What the fuck is Rust? Let's answer that question. Because I was asking myself that. I would look at the screen pics and I'd be like, that looks like garbage. And
the graphics are not great right now.
But when I played them, it was better than the screen pictures. I don't know why that was.
Except the day to night thing, that was really cool.
The sunset and
where
the sunrise.
Pitch black and you can't see anything. Though they don't even have stars. And then as the sunrise comes up, it gets the red on the trees and you can barely see.
Yeah.
They do some sweet things with that. Because
the
lighting effects, because you need the torch and the campsite to.
And then people could see you from a mile away.
Yeah,
which
exactly.
Could be a good or a bad thing, usually bad.
So, like, I thought that was really cool, but the animations of the character models are crap.
How about this? Let's sum it up. Let's sum up Rust in 2 sentences each, and see where we end up. I think it's a, I'm starting now, primitive man up until firearms simulation.
I think it is a Minecraft clone with better graphics.
Yeah, it's hard to top those ones. I mean, that pretty much sums it up. I think it's, first of all, the setting.
Yeah, we win.
Yes.
First of all, the setting is post-apocalyptic. I mean, it seems something.
Oh, yeah, because of the.
Yeah, well, there's, you know, like.
The rads.
Radiation and there's.
Airdrops.
Yeah, and there's airdrops. So it looks like, you know, a world that existed and got reduced back to, like, a Stone Age. And then you have to survive amongst other people as well. So it's everything that I've really come to expect this year. As far as a lot of titles being released, you know, it's crafting, survival, it's open world, you know, it's all that stuff. There's no direct, there's no direction to it. There's no quests. There's no objectives or goals. You kind of set those yourself.
And this is one of the best parts of is
survive is kind of the goal, right? like
yeah,
that's,
surviving and being established. You want to log
thriving,
back in,
surviving and thriving.
Yeah, thriving. Yeah, as it does in real life. I think maybe that is what resonates with the players. Because if you were to look at this on paper, what we just described doesn't sound fun, but it is fun. And I think what it is it's basically tapping into our inner caveman. What we've been hunters and gatherers the majority of our evolution, and this is just a really, like, a safer, because you're not going to get gored by some crazy beast out there. The very worst that happens is you're gonna die and get to spawn again, right? So this is, you know, as we started playing, okay, so we all started playing together, and we finally found each other, which is the hardest part. But we had to go to a PvE server, aka a bitch server, to get started.
And to learn the
game.
We found each other to learn the game.
That's what we told each other, but we ended up playing it for so many hours.
Yeah.
And we ended up building, I think, a pretty impressive structure.
Yeah.
You can see it on my Steam Rust profile if you want to check it out. Oh, shit.
Okay, sorry about that. A little technical difficulty here. My snake jumped off the counter.
Snakes don't jump, bro.
This one does. It's a rare breed. It's a Mexican jumping snake. Anyway, so you were telling us about this. You know, I've seen better structures, but yeah, it was a pretty tall structure.
I really liked our structure. And you know what? That is all up to you. I think you missed your calling as an architect. You can be a Rust architect, I guess.
Could have been, yeah.
I think maybe for people that haven't seen much of the game, maybe we go talk a little bit about the actual game. Like, you come in as an individual and you start off with a rock, basically, and some bandages, and
pretty much naked.
And there's trees around and rocks and stuff like that, and you can basically hit the rocks or the trees or the wood piles if you find them and get up wood and stone and other materials, and then use those materials to start crafting things such as a hatchet or a pickaxe or a pistol or a shotgun or what have you. But while this is all going on, there's wolves and bears and zombies around that you have to protect yourself from, as well as on the PvP servers, other humans that shoot without provocation. They just roll up on
now,
you
we
and
didn't
right away.
We didn't initially just go to the PvE server. We tried for about an hour and a half to make the PvP server so we could come back and report to you guys why we liked Rust or didn't like Rust or whatever. Well, we just couldn't even get together. It was so tough when you were... Every time Bobby was like, I think I'm getting close, or Chad was here, I think we're getting close, just shot in the face.
Yeah.
So that was maybe an additional problem that I'm okay with, but not for a beginner.
Yeah.
We need to learn the game.
Exactly. First. And I think after the session we had, I think I would prefer to go into a PvP server, because once we got up to the shotgun level and Bobby was equipping us with laser scopes and everything like that, there wasn't any challenge to the game because the zombies were easy to kill,
sure.
The bears were easy to kill. So it was just a matter of sustaining at that point, and there wasn't really any fun there.
Yeah, there's, you know, I don't think PvE servers are, I don't think any less of them than a PvP server. It's more for people who want to build. People who just want to, like, build cool looking places and play around with the crafting. I mean, there's a lot to do on a PvE server, but it is a whole entirely different element when you go to a PvP server. And, you know, it is nice to think that, yeah, like, we could go there and get all this cool stuff, but the chances of us making it as far as we did in the PvE server are very, very scarce.
Now, I want to argue with that, because I played by myself since you guys played, and I did pretty fucking well on my own.
And well, I think half of the problem was us trying to find each other. If there was no trying to find each other, you just go in there and you start crafting.
But also, I would have never got that far without knowing what I knew from playing together with you guys. Real quick, let me jump into this. So I started at the beginning, found a random field that I felt like would spawn a lot of useful stuff.
Nodes, and, right?
Yeah, nodes, sure. And I put my beginning architecture in an outcrop that was covered in almost every angle except for towards the beach. So you would have to be standing on, there's not really a beach, but the edge of the world, and be looking in order to see it. So I'm like, okay, this is a spot. I'm very careful. Every time I'm hitting a rock, I'm crouched. Every time I'm hunting, I'm crouched. The whole time. Anytime I'm doing anything, I'm hiding myself from wherever the road is, right? So I'm being super careful. I'm having fun, too, because I'm being sneaky. And I've always said that I'm not a big fan of stealth games. But when you're being sneaky against real people, that's fun. Like, because I'm going to be killed by something that actually saw me. And, you know, these things that you worry about in stealth games where viewable distance and stuff, that's not real. Actual vision is real, right? So I'm being real sneaky. And I'm doing really, really well. Like, I'm comparing it to our PvE experience. There is loot everywhere. And, you know, every once in a while I saw somebody, but they seemed to be more scared of me than vice versa. So whatever. You know, I got my bow going. I did some hunting. I would say I went through about 3 night cycles before I go, shit, I need a furnace. And I need a workbench if I'm going to continue. Because I killed a zombie. First drop, guess what? Shotgun schematic. I'm like, I'm on my way, right? So I'm building my house up in this alcove. And I was listening to a podcast, not ours, I'm not that bad. I'm listening to a podcast, so I can't hear what's going on in game. Next thing I know, I'm bleeding and half my life is gone. And I turn to the right and there's this guy standing there, naked with a shotgun. And he just shot me to say hi. But he didn't finish me off, right? So I bandaged myself up. I'm like, okay, fuck. I'm getting incredibly lucky because this is a populated server.
You didn't close the door just out of curiosity?
What door? I'm still, this is beginning stages.
But you're building a furnace before you build a
door? That's rocks. Oh. Like, wood is really tough, right?
Yeah, I gotcha.
And a door specifically, extremely tough. So, thinking the way you do, I go, I don't want to get shot again, but I have all this stuff for a furnace and all this stuff that I need to build. I'll just build another wall. It's a lot cheaper. So now I've enclosed myself completely in walls, right? I build my furnace. I build my workbench. I build my shotgun. I build clothes. I'm not wearing leather. I'm looking like a motherfucking badass. Guess what? Dumbass can't get out of his own home.
There's
no way to kill the walls. But you can with C4. I went and looked it up online because I was legit, you know? I'm a motherfucking leather hair wearing badass. Can't get out of his own goddamn house.
Wow.
So ultimate luck is always trumped by ultimate stupidity. That's what I learned.
Okay.
It's a valuable lesson. Yeah, you know, the game is, I mean, it's obviously got a few flaws when it comes to graphics, character animations, and stuff like
that.
We
had some network issues, too.
Yeah, there were some network issues.
Like, it seemed like constant lag.
A lot of lag. But, you know, I think the gameplay is fun. I think there's something valuable there. And as far as, you know, you're talking about playing by yourself versus playing with other people. I think, you know, there's advantages to both. If you do play with other people, it is a hell of a lot funner, but it takes a long time to meet up with people. It also depends on what server you're on. I've been on servers where it seems like there's a ton of resources and there's not a lot of combat. Then I've been on other servers where there's 2 really big clans, like, kind of teamed up and everyone's shooting on site and there's not a lot of resources to go around. So it really depends on what... Excuse me. It really depends on what server you land on. And it's really hard to find a good one that has everything that you want. It's got enough resources. It's got, you know, it's not too harsh of a PvP environment. And it doesn't lag like crazy all the time.
That's one of the biggest problems that Gary said that they have. Cropping up quite a bit is two rival gangs growing to huge numbers, and any new player has no chance because all the resources and everything, and so you just have these two rival gangs. But in a way, maybe it's not fun for them anymore, or I don't know if it's getting in the way, but isn't that human nature? You group up with those like-minded people and hey, fuck those guys, you know, we're on this side of the street, that side of the street doesn't even exist. As soon as you have a group, Apple versus Mac, doesn't matter what it is, you hate those other people. So this is it's human nature being shown in this simplistic little game that's probably cropped up, right?
Yeah, but I think it still makes it less accessible for new people.
No, absolutely, yeah.
And I think one of a suggestion we could have is if new people are starting to play this, don't get caught up on a server until you've found the server you like. Feel free to go out and experiment with different types of servers and find the server.
I would absolutely recommend PvE first, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you learn the crafting because it's not intuitive at all. You have to actually click everything. I just learned this.
You have to go through all the steps and then you figure it out. Or even a low population PvP server might be helpful as well. And as far as the network issue goes, that's, it was one of the biggest drawbacks for me. But also, there was a while where, especially on PvP servers, I could not find a server without, like, a couple people using hacks. And that, like, would kill me with, they have some sort of, like, proximity hack where if they see you, if you're in line of sight, then you're automatically dead. So you can hide behind walls and stuff, but it really sucked, like, just getting killed left and right by these people. I had to change like a few servers before I finally found one where that wasn't going on. Some of the servers have admins to kind of moderate that stuff, which can be helpful.
Somebody told me that they could, because I brought it up, how could I get out of my stupid ass house? And somebody said that the admin will break it down for 1,000 wood. I had like 300, 400 on me. I was like, I'm fucked. There's no way out of it.
So they've already addressed the issue of cheating a little bit. They said they've banned over 1,000 people so far. So they're looking into it, and they're trying to figure out ways to solve these cheaters.
That's crazy, man, because I'm pretty sure this game is only available on Steam. And if your Steam account is banned, I mean, you could always make another one, but...
You lose all those games.
Yeah, you lose all those games. And is it really worth it? Stop cheating, guys.
Yeah.
Just being an asshole.
I mean, if it's on a server where it's allowed, and like, that's the point. Because I used to play games where people would make hacks. You know, like, when I played Jedi Knight, like Dark Forces 2, like, they had special servers where, you know, hacks were allowed. And, you know, that was fun in its own way. But, you know, if it's on one where you're not supposed to be doing it, then, yeah, that's not good. But, I mean, on this type of game, it seems to be a problem. DayZ's kind of going through the same thing, where they just have a lot of people trying to get an advantage through hacks. And it's a problem you're going to run into with this. Because this is the type of game where I think cheating really pays off.
Yeah.
So, at the end of the day, $20, I wouldn't say it's quite worth it. But the potential is almost endless. And I know that I'm eventually going to get my money's worth. They're probably going to charge $40 to $50 for this in their official release because they could probably get away with it. So, jump in and have some fun. If you can afford the $20, it's probably going to be worth it in the long run.
So you would say, would you be playing this? Are you going to be playing this some more?
After the last session that I had where I was successful, I was like, why couldn't I do this with Bobby and Chad? And it would be even more fun, you know, do the same kind of concept. Oh, and also there's a map out there. There's plenty of maps. I saw what it's shaped like. And now I know that it's a lot easier. That would make it a lot easier for us to find each other because the road that goes around, it looks like an hourglass. It's exactly an hourglass. And there, along the road, everybody can always find the road for the most part. Along the road, there's landmarks, and they're on either side of the road. So you can pretty much figure out where you are on the whole road. And from there, we can extrapolate where each other are. And I think we'll have a much easier time. So I want to give it another shot. But also, I wanted to get in DayZ this week. So we're going to have to, first world problems, too many games.
How about you, Bobby?
You know what? If other people are playing it, then I'll definitely hop on and play it. Now, this is a game that you cannot just pick up and play for a little bit. Like, you have to not have any plans for the evening.
Yeah, that's true.
So,
but the evening did go fast when we were playing.
Oh, yeah, it did. I had a really good time.
Yeah. I mean, this is the kind of game that you sit down and play with your buddies one night, and next thing you know, it's like 4 in the morning. Which, you know, like, so it's a weekend game for me is basically what I'm saying. And, yeah, I wouldn't be opposed to playing this again, but it really depends on who else is playing it. There are a ton of people playing this on Steam, so the community is there. And that's
worth the $20?
I'd say so. Yeah. Yeah, it's totally worth $20, especially if this is your thing. If you're, like, really into Minecraft, you're going to like this. Probably better. I like it more than Minecraft. These aren't my particular type of games, though.
Yeah, I agree.
Because it's just not one that you can be done with. I like to play through a game. Most games, I like to play through and be like, all right, that was it. Moving on. But this one can go on and on forever. I'm interested to see what direction they go with a lot of the things. I know this is an alpha. There's obviously a lot more. I mean, not just problems that are going to be fixed, but new things added and possibly things changed. I'm interested to see what they change and what they add and, yeah, what direction the game goes. So,
if you had the choice, what direction would you want to go with the game? What changes would you make?
I would like to see stronger NPCs, like stronger zombies.
For sure.
Because especially in a PvE server, it becomes pretty trivial to take out a zombie. It's really easy. I would like to see...
Black zombies,
yeah,
you can take them down.
Zombies, you take them out very easily.
Are you being racist?
So I think if there were stronger NPCs, it might... It would make PvE servers better, and it would also give people more of a reason to group up. I think there needs to be something that forces people to group up and to unify, rather than... Because you're going to get a lot of people that are just shooting each other in the face. Just because they see someone, they try to kill them. Like, that's just their first reaction. You need to give the player a reason to work together.
I would prefer maybe not a really strong zombie, but... A big monster would be really cool.
Like a raid boss?
Or whatever. What was that? Like a raid boss that roams. Yeah, it would
like
roam.
Like a Fellreaver going around the
world. Yeah, Fellreavers.
What do you guys think about some sort of character progression in this game? Some sort of leveling up?
Well, that's kind of what the crafting accommodates is, you know, start with a rock and by the end you're with the shotgun or whatever. Like, that's kind of the leveling up system that you have. If I was coming up with changes... I'd want the crafting system to be more step-based. Like, I know it's early in alpha, so they kind of pretty much have everything open, but I'm hoping when it gets closer to final, they're going to lock things out and have an actual progression. Like, you got to build the hatchet before you can build the lockpick before you can...
You kind of do. I don't think you got that deep into it, but it all is all listed.
Yeah.
It is at least all listed until you get the blueprints, but you cannot make... a lot of things until you have metal fragments, and you need a furnace in order to do that.
Yeah, you need.
So there is some progression, but I know exactly what you're talking about.
The other thing that I thought would be cool is if there were reasons to fight for things, like if there were rare node spawns, or maybe like a downed helicopter, which just gives you metal fragments or whatever.
Like the plane would crash instead of dropping stuff.
Exactly. So I guess those airdrops do accomplish that, but it would be cool that, you know, there's a node there that you want to go get, but you're scared that you're going to get shot.
Has anybody gotten any of these crates? I haven't.
No.
Bobby?
No,
you know what? The one time that I was going to get a crate, I was thinking to myself, I wonder if I stand directly under this, if it'll squash me like a bug, and it did. So, I got the crate, I died, and
got by the crate.
Yeah, exactly. It must have, I hope somebody was watching, because that must have been. Because, you know, when you play a game, you're like, I know I am. I'm always testing the boundaries. I'm always seeing, like, okay, where are the invisible walls? Where do they not want me to go? And so, like, yeah, I saw it drop, and I'm just like, I wonder if I take damage from letting this thing land on my head. And sure enough, I did.
Were you accomplished at that point, or
no?
Oh, okay. So yeah.
This is
it's not as bad.
Yeah, it's like my first or second time playing. This was very.
I would have looted the box and pissed on your dead head while I got it too, noob.
Yeah, so I don't know. I think it'll be good. I think this game is going to appeal to a lot of people because a lot of these, especially the PvE servers that I played on. People have just, like, opened up shop, man. They've just, like, planted themselves in there. They've got a community. They log in. They're like, hey, what's up, dude? You know, it's the same people that were on the server yesterday. You know, they know each other. They're telling jokes. They're getting
like neighbors and shit.
Yeah, exactly. It's a community that these people have built up. You know, they've got their favorite server that they go on, and they see the same people. And it's like almost like a chat room, you know. You don't see those anymore, but it's got that kind of feeling to it.
It's so crazy that a little bit of a law that you can't break at all. You can't break a server law like that, unless you're hacking or whatever. But changes the entire dynamic of the game. You go to another server, shot in the face. Walk around, shot in the face. Just woke up, shot in the face. There's no benefit to killing a guy with just a rock, shot in the face. Go somewhere else. Hey, how you doing? You need any food? You hungry? Here's some food. Like, what a huge difference in the same exact game just from server laws. And now since this game has so much potential in the future to branch in all these different ways, what if every server admin is like a god and he just makes this what he thinks? He crafts the rules. This is the way I think people would most have fun. And people are going to gravitate towards one server or another, you know, because they like the server set up. And that says a lot about a lot of things about people and how they interact. Like when we naturally started, grouping up and making our structure, we naturally fell into our roles.
Yeah.
Right away, it wasn't like somebody took a man and was like, you do this, you do that, which could work too. You could have the bossy guy. Or just naturally like, oh, you know what? I don't think I could have done anything else because I really enjoyed farming. So I went out there and I was doing the adventure. Bobby was really good at architecture, and he already knew the basis of the game. So he was building stuff. And me and Chad, and then we started competing, doing our own little quests within ourselves.
Yeah, to see who could get more wood.
Who could get more wood, right?
Because wood is the one that's hard to get.
Except for in the morning.
Yes, that's true.
I'd like to see them like take it even further and really define those roles that people can take, you know? And I think that would help like build a group mentality. I think that would give people a reason to get together. Like, if you can only choose one direction to level your character up, maybe you are a blacksmith, so you're really good at crafting things with the furnace, or you're a carpenter, you're really good at building like buildings with wood, or an architect.
You should naturally get better at whatever you're doing.
Yeah, or maybe you're a really good hunter. So like one group could be like, what are you, a hunter? Great, we need a hunter, you know, come with us. You know, this is our place we got set up, it's our encampment. So I think if you have to kind of channel people in certain directions, it would give them a reason to come together and fill in the gaps.
But I think 90% of the people that are going to play this want to play to shoot each other. Like, I think the PvE server is going to be a rare thing. I think most of the people, judging from DayZ or these other games that are similar, I think most people want to go in, get a shotgun, and start blasting other people, you know? So I don't...
But when you have a group of friends, say we were to all join in, we're probably going to, I would say, it'd be easier for us to overcome somebody that was singular and was trying to do that. I don't see a bunch of people joining on in this, let's group, get a bunch of shit just so we could terrorize the crunchy side. I feel like that's more of a singular purpose, and that's eventually going to go down to mold friends together.
Well, I just think like the griefer mentality is something that a game like this appeals strongly to those people that,
yeah, for sure,
enjoy griefing.
Yeah.
So I think there is a larger percentage of people that play games like this or DayZ or whatever that have that griefer mentality that get a kick out of ruining somebody else's day, you know? And there's definitely gamers out there like that, and I think those people enjoy this type of game because they can ruin your day because they can destroy hours worth of
it's a lot easier than jumping into front of your cast and wow, yeah, you can't see your fish or whatever that,
yeah,
was.
Exactly.
I don't know, we'll see what they do with it, but I really wish there was a way to kind of minimize the rewards for like doing that exact kind of thing, just you know, killing people just because you can. I mean, it's something that I don't think you can get away from. People are going to do that regardless. And the people who don't enjoy that kind of game are probably already playing on PvE servers.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's just something that you just have to expect in this kind of game.
Maybe it has a little bit for everything, for everybody. And, like, we already brought it up, but I think, you know, a big monster would be best for both servers.
Yeah.
I think they both need it, and that would be really cool.
If there's a reason to do it. You know, like, you can't just... I mean, people would do it anyways, but...
Mad loot on that thing,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, like, if you're dropping 100 animal fat or something each swing,
yeah.
or something like that.
Yeah. For sure.
So, yeah, it's quite a bit about Rust. Next week is probably going to be DayZ that we're talking about. I know I've already picked it up and played a little bit of it, and hopefully you guys will grab it, too. It'll be interesting to compare the two.
Yeah, definitely. I'm excited. I want to see... Especially since I played DayZ mm-hmm. in its other iteration of it. So I want to see how this one
looks a hell of a lot better. But we'll get into that next week.
Yeah.
Bobby, what else have you been playing?
Let's see. I've been playing, obviously a lot of Rust, a little bit of TF2. Just mainly because I have not had the time to really sit down and get into a game during the week. Been real busy at work, so... you know, I got to have a game that I can just pick up real quick, play for a bit, and then just put it right back.
There's a lot to be said for a game that boots up quick. You could get in game quick and get out quick. Like, there's TF2, you could have 2 minutes of fun, and it's 2 minutes of fun. Maybe you didn't accomplish anything, but you can have 2 minutes of fun. Other games, you know, it takes like, it feels like forever to get into the game.
Yeah.
So you can't just pick it up and then put it down.
Yeah, it's definitely... Yeah, TF2 is definitely one of those games. It's such a fast game and a quick game, too. And there's really no downside to just hopping in one and hopping back out. You aren't really hurting the team that much by leaving, and you aren't really, you know, there's no commitment. So, yeah, that's been good. And I've been trying to challenge myself by playing different classes, and that's going all right. I tried playing Demo Man, which is, like, my worst class ever. Yeah, that didn't work out. Better at it.
Did you use the melee weapons, or are you sticking to the?
No, I have not even tried the melee weapon. Yeah, you know what? With almost all the classes, I rarely change to the alternative weapons. I keep almost all original weapons.
Last week you were talking about the bone saw. I was like, he still uses the bone saw. There's so many better options.
Yeah, no, I actually use the bone saw that I think it does less damage, but you get more of an uber charge on a successful hit.
That's,
do you use the Kritzkrieg, or do you use the standard for that?
It depends on the situation. I go back and forth between Kritzkrieg and the Uber.
He does the opposite of what I ask him to do, because he's usually my pocket medic. No, he doesn't like it.
Well, I mean, because I play a lot of Dust Bowl, so a lot of times when you're defending, you want an Uber, obviously, because they're going to Uber and get a really strong push, and that's when you use your Uber to counter that. And it's really a matter, like, the best thing you can do as a medic is just save your Uber to counter theirs. Like, that just messes them up every time. They gain no ground.
I feel off completely opposite. I feel like on defense, you should have the Kritzkrieg to just mow down everything but the Uber, so that the Uber is more manageable for the Pyro to handle. So,
well, it depends on
it could go either way.
Who you're healing, you know? If you're,
you know what? Fuck you, man. I'm tired about going over this 1,000 times. No, I'm kidding.
If you're playing a soldier, yeah, you want crits with a soldier. But a lot of other classes, you want the Uber. You know, and I do enjoy Pyro a lot. I gotta say, I do enjoy Pyro, and I do enjoy going melee with the medic occasionally, which you're not supposed to do, but sometimes you're left no choice when everyone gets blown up and you're the only one standing there, and you're surrounded by bad guys, and you're just trying to take one down with you. It's kind of fun just to go crazy and run at them, and I see other medics do it too, and it cracks me up because it's just like, what is that guy thinking? But I've totally been there before. Where it's just there's no one else around to heal, so you're just...
And
like,
sometimes they surprise you, man.
Oh.
And I'm surprised we've never done this before, but we should do the dual Uber medics.
Yeah, it's tough to pull off, but
yeah,
it's possible.
If you can do it, I'm sure that's a lot of fun.
Yeah, where you build up enough... Someone Ubers you, you run in, you get enough melee attacks to build up your Uber, then you Uber them, and then you just keep doing that. I've seen people do it very well, and it is crazy.
So TF2, Rust... Anything else?
What else have I been playing? I don't know. What have you guys seen me playing? I'm sure you've seen it pop up a million times. I'm trying to remember.
All I see is Barbie Dreamhouse 2. It doesn't even matter what you're playing. Like, I'm like, what the fuck is he playing?
I'll tell you what I'm looking forward to playing, though, is Broken Age is coming out at the end of this month. Point-and-click adventure game by Double Fine. I found out you do get the first act and the second act with one purchase. They don't know when the second act's coming out. People who play this game, there's already reviews of it out there. It's
Are you absolutely sure it's not out? Because Exactly. I've seen reviews and stuff.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of people who've already gotten a copy of the game. But the official release date, when I'm getting it, is the 28th.
I guess we'll get into it next podcast. But what I hear so far is that the puzzles aren't really puzzles, and it's basically just a really good story. And yeah, I guess that's what I expected. Anyway.
Yeah. And I'm okay with that, too. Some people will have a problem with that, but when it comes to these point-and-click adventure games, if the puzzle is too hard, you get pissed off at that, and you completely forget about what's going on in a story. It completely ruins the experience for me sometimes.
Well, let's break it down. This is the way I like to look at it. Like value per dollar, right? So you go to a movie, you're going to pay, what, is it about $13 to go see a movie, right?
Depending, yeah.
And that's about 2 hours of entertainment, right? So now you're going to say a great story about at that production value, and you're going to get, say, 5 hours out of it, right? And you're paying $24. That's a little bit less than what you'd be paying for, you know, top shelf movies or whatever. So if it's a top shelf game, you're getting 5 hours for 24, you know, you can't say like, oh, I got ripped off, I only got a good story. You're paying, you know, if you go to the movies, that's a little bit, you're being a hypocrite a little bit, I think.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know. It's so hard for me to say, like, what is worth it and what isn't worth it, because it's different for every person. It really is.
I think it's a lot easier to say it wasn't worth it than it is to say it was worth it. Like, if you pay for something and you're like, oh, yeah, that was cool, you know, that's as far as it goes. Now, if you were like, fuck, I can't believe I paid that for that goddamn game, then that sticks out of your mind.
I think if you're not saying, fuck, I got ripped off, then it was worth it. Like, you don't have to say, man. I mean, how rarely do you say, man, that was really worth it? For you, Skyrim has paid itself over 5 times. Yeah. So that was really worth it. But how many times do you get that? Like, you don't get that too often. But
a few times a year.
I think being pleasantly happy with the title that you have means that it was worth it.
Yeah, if you're not complaining, that's probably a good judge.
Yeah, and really, we're picking up these games for ridiculously cheap. I mean, especially on a Steam sale or, like, you know, even the price that some of these games get lowered to is just incredible. Like, I've seen the craziest deals. We saw Bioshock Infinite for $9.99 on the Steam sale.
So good.
I mean, are you kidding me? Like, $10? Yeah. That's like, have you ever bought a beer at an airport? Like, it's like $15 or something.
Can you imagine people complaining about this podcast for free? They're like, motherfuckers, that was goddamn free, and I feel terrible now.
They'll probably complain, but not about the price. Weird side note about that Bioshock Infinite is the PlayStation Plus. You get it for free, Bioshock Infinite, with PlayStation Plus.
What's PlayStation Plus?
It's how you play online. It's like the Xbox Gold equivalent.
Okay, but so you pay for it.
You pay for it to play online games.
You pay to be online. But hey, Bobby, they pay to be online.
Yes, correct. But PlayStation Plus also gives you free games. Every month you get free games. And one of the games that's...
If it's Bioshock, that's pretty
now decent. Available is Bioshock. And
yeah, how much is it, though?
It's the same price. It's, I think, $50 a year or something like that.
About $50 a year.
That's not too bad.
It's not too bad.
How about you, Emilio? What have you been playing?
So I jumped into Rust, obviously, and... I had a little story without you guys. I always playing Hearthstone a little bit. I always like to wait 3 days and try to knock out multiple. I think that's the most efficient way to get your free gold is to wait 3 days, and a lot of time you'll get overlap.
Speaking of which, Hearthstone just went open beta. So if you had signed up for the beta for Hearthstone, if you go in and check your account, it should be available for you to download and play. So... check it out. I highly recommend Hearthstone as well.
If you're a PC gamer and you don't, you just go pick this up. It's free. Go buy. It's not pay to win. It's pay to win, maybe in ranked, maybe a bit. Yeah, but
a certain amount. You get up to a certain amount, and then that little extra step is pay to win.
For absolutely,
the little legendaries. But other than that, no.
It's a great game. It's free to play. The production values. Very high. The first time, this is kind of weird, the first time I've run into real server issues was last night, and 2 matches in a row, the opponent timed out, and I got the free win for my, and it was in arena too, and then, so I got 2 free wins, and then my third one, everybody timed out, and it crashed out, but I still had those, you know, I got rewarded basically for them having an internet connection or whatever, for the servers not being well or doing well. Besides that, I'm always playing Skyrim. I have a little bit of a story if you guys want to hear it.
Sure.
Again. what's our time looking like?
What do they say? Take a shot whenever you mention Skyrim?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we're good on time. Go for it.
All right, cool. So I'm doing the Dawnguard thing, and somebody says, go recruit this girl. I got to go recruit her. Go way out in the wilderness. And I think this is a little bit of the randomness of Skyrim backfiring, because this girl had set up her camp inside a drug den. Basically, is what happened. So this girl that I'm, you know, she's doing scientific research and she needs these gyrodes, and she thinks that the mud crab stole the gyrodes. And so I'm like, but she's ditzy the way she talks, even though she's a scientist. She's like a ditzy scientist. I'm like, why would a mud crab steal her stuff? There's no way that the mud crabs stole her stuff. It's these drug dealers right here. They obviously stole it so that they could sell it. There's no way. So I went and started investigating their camp. I looked at all their shit first, and then I started talking to them. One of them's ridiculous. One is a girl, and she's the drug dealer, and she's trying to be very articulate and using big words to try to sound smart while she's fucked up on Skooma, which is the local Skyrim drug. And she's making no sense. And at first, I'm even trying to make sense. I'm like, maybe she's even more highbrow than I can follow. Like, wow. But then I was like, no, none of this makes any sense. But it's funny. I'm giggling and stuff. And so then I go, you know, she has an orc, and he's part of a drum circle, and he's playing his drums. And I go and talk to him, and he's talking about how basically he's an outcast because he has no skills in the orc tradition. And that he just lives off of this girl that feeds him skooma or whatever. And so he's talking about how, like, before she found him, he couldn't start a fire because he's useless. And he went and found pyromancers and taunted them to chase him and throw fireball spells to maybe randomly light a bush that he could go back to and get some fire to light a campfire. Like, that's where he's at in his life when he found this girl. So ultimately, they didn't have the gyrode. It was actually maybe 4 yards from the girl originally by the riverbank. But, and I felt stupid for going through that and through a cave that was nearby. But ultimately, I was glad that I just talked to these two random skooma heads because it was hilarious and I had a good time.
So part of the quest officially?
Well, it had nothing to do with the quest. I think what it was this is a random camp that jumps or it just spawns throughout Skyrim. And it just happened to do it right next to her. And so these two things, in any other game, I would have just rode right by these two people in a tent. It would have had nothing. But since they were right there, I interacted with them. You know, I had a good time. It was fun.
Hmm. It's awesome. Kind of crazy how they put all that time to generate the acting.
Has nothing to do.
And nothing to do with anything.
And that's one of the greatest things about Skyrim. Like, every time I play, it's a fresh start. Especially now that I'm playing with a preconceived notion or rule set where I'm not playing as Emilio if he was a warrior. I'm playing as this orcish warrior that's kind of dumb, has a two-handed sword, and makes decisions. He's impulsive, and he sees the world in black and white. And so I'm seeing new opportunities present themselves that never, if it was just me, which is how I usually play games, which I always think that I'm the big cocked white knight. Big cock white knight, yeah, that works.
Okay.
But, you know, since I'm playing as somebody else, I'm seeing new things in the game, and you would anyway. I mean, that game is so immersive. Anyway, Skyrim's great. Take a shot.
What about you, Chad? What have you been playing?
Well, I've been playing some Hearthstone, which I love. So you guys should play it if you get a chance.
Chad and I played each other for about half an hour, and we came to almost a draw. Chad took the...
We played longer than half an hour. We played like 9-10 games in a row. Remember we did three different decks?
Yeah, and then we played each one a match, and you won the first match, I won the second match, you won the third match, and the fourth match, I think you won or something like that. Yeah, it was very close.
It was.
One game difference. It was fun.
Yeah, it was fun. And we were both on Skype talking trash to each other.
Yeah, talking shit. But also discussing the game at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. So, and then Rust, which I had fun with, and then the re-addiction. So a bunch of guys at work decided to kick up WoW again. So
tell the real truth. Who's the first one in?
Well, okay, so I decided to start playing WoW because the new expansion was announced, and so that's coming out in a little bit. So I wanted to get up to 90, get a character ready to go, even though they now tell you you're going to get 390.
Yeah, I don't get your reasoning here. I would think wait till the expansion and then start playing.
So the real reason is I wanted to play an MMO, and all these MMOs that have come out haven't caught my attention. You know, Final Fantasy XIV, Guild Wars 2, Terra, like any of these ones I play for a month and then don't renew the subscription because they just don't hold my attention. So I went back to the one that I know would be fun and would hold my attention. I went back to WoW, you know. Because with all the changes, I hadn't played the Alliance side, so I decided to play the Alliance side. So these are all new quests to me, so it's like a new game to me, basically.
So this is your first time playing Alliance?
No, I've played Alliance, but not since Cataclysm. And Cataclysm was where they, you know, changed all the old world quests and changed everything around.
Yeah, just revamped the whole thing on that one.
So that's what I've been playing. And then I'm excited to play DayZ for this next week. So I'm excited for that.
Anything else on the menu for you guys besides DayZ?
As far as games to play, Starbound. Now that I've heard a few people talk about it, and I think it's, if not roguelike, roguelike-ish, and I'm all about roguelites. There's another roguelike that's in alpha, I believe, right now, or it's early. It's something like Earth, or I forget. So anytime I see roguelike, I'm almost insta-buy right now. Like, I'm really enjoying roguelikes.
What got you into roguelikes?
I would say the first one was Dungeons of Dreadmore.
And was that your favorite? No, that's the top-down one, right?
That's the top-down one.
That you...
It's one of my favorites. They're all my favorites.
What was the
FTL,
one?
FTL, probably.
What was the... Oh, Fast and Light. Yeah, that one was...
FTL, so good.
Yeah, that one is amazing.
I've recommended that to, like, non-gamers, and they haven't tried it. But I think it would apply almost universally, because you can pause and think.
Yeah.
You know? It's not reaction-based, so...
100%. What was the one that got, like, dwarfism and...
That was Rogue Legacy. And that was a lot of
that
fun, too.
You saw me. I was watching you play,
Any game that I go into Chad's room or Chad goes into my room and we watch each other play, like, more than 2 hours I watched you play Hearthstone.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, because you wanted to play and you just hadn't gotten an invite.
Yeah, for sure. I hadn't been.
Point.
Well, I got one. I just threw it away.
Typical of me, though.
Where are we at on time? Do you know?
We're doing okay on time.
How about you, Bobby? Do you have some things that you want to talk about?
Well, as far as like stuff coming up, I mean, obviously DayZ. I almost feel obligated to play that game, although I gotta admit I'm not that excited about it. Like I'm gonna dive into it. You know, I'm gonna like spend a lot of time and really get into it so I can develop an opinion on it. But like honestly, I'm not that excited about it.
Mr. Shutdown, everybody. Mr. Shutdown.
Gotta shut it down. I don't know. I'm at a loss right now. I really can't think of what I want to pick up next. I'll probably either finish up Deadpool or I'll pick up Assassin's Creed 4. I feel really bad because I've got Black Flag, Call of Duty Ghosts, and that new Batman game, and I haven't played any of them hardly at all. Like, I got all these new AAA titles, and I haven't even touched them.
How were their reviews on Origin? I haven't even looked. Batman Origin.
Fairly low, from what I recall. The Metascore was pretty low, and they didn't post it on Steam. And have you noticed Steam does not put Metascores on some games when they're really low?
No, I've usually noticed, indie games are never posted. But I guess they don't have a Metascore, right? Because not enough people review
them. Is it up to the developer to decide whether or not to put it up? Because maybe that's what's going on.
I don't know.
No, because there's some that they do post that are horrendously low. I think it might be there's a certain amount of scores that need to be on Metacritic for them to actually publish it. you know, to give it legitimacy. But yeah, I've noticed like Batman, like Arkham Origins, why wouldn't there be a Metacritic score on that one? There's one on every
That's a huge other. Game. Yeah. It's a huge title.
There's got to be a ton of reviews.
There. Wow. Could you imagine if they accepted a bribe to like not post it at a certain point?
Maybe they were just asked not to post it because it was, because that's pretty damaging to go to a store page for a game and see like 55. Like that.
That's rough.
Would heavily influence. I don't know if Origins is that low, but
I would never buy a 55 unless it was, you know, Duke Nukem Forever or whatever.
Well, that was 54, and that is worth $5. I'll tell you that right now.
That's the running joke, by the way. He thinks it's the greatest game of all time.
I just think people are freaking bitches about it. Like, yeah, it's not what we wanted.
I enjoyed my playthrough.
This is the game that took 10 years to come out, right?
12 years. I mean, yeah, it's a long time.
Okay.
Story of why it didn't come out. But basically, it's, and honestly, this is why I think Half-Life 3 is going to eventually fail, because anytime you anticipate something for years and years and years, it never lives up to the hype. It's the Star Wars
thing. Yeah, but let's be honest. Most of that comes down to the developer, and if there's one developer I can trust, it's Blizzard. But if there's one after that I can trust, it's Valve. It's pretty much in that order for me.
Yeah,
but I feel like...
But Valve doesn't make anything anymore.
Yeah, Valve seems to be very hands-off. Like, we don't want to like, take the blame for anything. You know, like with the Steam machines, when Gabe Newell came out and presented that, he, like, came out and was like, yep, here's some Steam machines. Anyone got any questions? Da-da-da-da. Okay, see you later. You know, it's like they don't want to commit. They don't want to look bad, and I feel like they think they're getting set up for...
But they haven't, really. When has Valve failed? Is a thing. I'm so hypercritical of their new stuff right now, but at the same time, I love everything they do.
And the other thing is, they're making money. They got to be making money hand over fist with Steam.
They've got to be making so much money.
So why, you know, why rush things out, or why do anything that's not the best? You know.
Yeah. No, they do have a commitment to quality that I totally respect. But you know, I don't know, man. I don't know. It's just the formula is there. It's just like anytime you anticipate, you highly anticipate something, it does not matter how good it is. I mean, look at freaking Star Wars. If Star Wars can fail, then anything can fail. So.
Well,
I don't think it did, though.
Anything with Jar Jar Binks will fail. Let's just go with that.
You're something.
Oh, God, don't. Please.
Okay, so Arkham Origins got 74.
That's not low.
That's not terrible.
It's low for a Batman game recently, though.
What did the other ones get, like 80, 95?
They've got to be. They're amazing games, I thought. But besides that, I'm really liking what Steam is doing in supporting the Oculus. What they've said recently, they say by 2015 they want a fully functional plug-and-play VR experience on the shelf ready to go, and they're not going to make their own. They're going to work with Oculus. They worked with Oculus to come up with the Crystal Cove, which we talked about last week, but in showing their support, they've also made Steam virtual now, so you could float around in your Steam library and go between the pages and stuff like that. And this is all free. You could do that right now. If you have a Oculus Rift, throw it on. You should be able to. I don't know what you need to go through to do it, but you can just start looking at Steam and VR, which is great.
Yeah, it'll be cool. Like, if you're playing the game and you can minimize it and still have all that Steam up and still all look virtual,
which wouldn't take you out of the whole experience.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And you said it. Like a Minority Report kind of setup where you kind of look around with your head.
Yeah, that's what the reporter had said it looks like. So I'm thinking that's... And now with the head tracking, right? So since Crystal Cove has head tracking, which means you're now motion captured, why not put those little two... Those dots that are all over those things, why not put some dots on your fingertips, right? And now, yeah, you can manipulate... Because you already have the camera going, you might as well manipulate the world with your fingers. And yeah, you could totally, I'm envisioning going through your Steam library, scrolling by using your arms and stuff. I know it sounds all tiring and stuff, but how fucking cool to have that. Maybe even, I'm going to go even crazier here, where there's a little bit of haptic feedback coming from the thing, so it feels like you're touching something when you feel touch a virtual surface. That'd be pretty awesome, too.
And how quick does that...
Oh, I already wrapped them around my dick right now.
Yeah. How quickly does it go straight to say?
Have you guys used...
Mr. Shutdown, everybody. Mr. Shutdown.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to say, all this stuff sounds cool, but, you know, when it actually becomes a reality and we actually have this technology and we're able to use it, not a lot of people use it consistently. It's, you know, I mean... the Xbox with the Kinect, PlayStation had that little, like, wand thing.
The Move.
Yeah, the Move.
I have one of those in my pants, too.
Oh, awesome. And then they got it. And I'm like, never mind.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like the Wii mentality. Everybody was all about the Wii, and then that lasted, you know, a couple of years, and now, you know, it's gone away. But have you guys used the Oculus Rift? Like, I used it for, like, half an hour, 45 minutes, and... And this was early on, so it's probably gotten a lot better, but I was getting nauseous, and I never get nauseous in games. So I hope as the progressions happen, it cleans
up. I just read a report yesterday where the reporter had done both versions. He's used the Crystal Curve now, and he was one of the few people that threw up using the first one. He actually vomited. There's only been, like, a few that reported it or whatever. No nausea at all with the second iteration.
The weird part comes from, so your head moves around and you can see, but you're moving with your...
fake legs.
Either your keyboard or whatever. Right. So your brain is trying to understand how you're moving forward without moving, yet your head is moving... Like, there's a disconnect there that your brain's got to get used to, and I think... As you play it, I'm sure you'll get used to it. And the other thing is, once you take it off, it's a little disorienting too. Like, you're in this, like, different world, and then you take it off, and you've got to readjust back into your world too. So it might be like 3D gaming or whatever, where you could only play it for an hour before, you know, your eyes bleed or you start throwing up or whatever. So,
I always thought that those people that had, you know, issues, I was like, oh, they're all just pussies.
I thought so too. People, yeah. You hear people about getting nauseous playing first-person shooter, which right. We've grown up on.
Or walking out of first-person movies.
Yeah, but yeah, and I laugh at that stuff. But I put on this VR, and I was like, okay, I can see what I can see why people say this.
You were seated, you said, right?
Yeah, I was seated. Mm. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, well, they have said they've made a lot of improvements in that area. Hopefully it's true, but we won't really know until we actually put them on for ourselves and try it out, which I hope is this year. I mean, have they scheduled a release date?
Not that I've heard of, but I can't afford a VR headset anyway, so I'm not paying too close attention to it. Bobby, on the other hand, might be first person in line to get one of these.
And then hate it.
This is not worth it.
Yeah, I mean, hey, I invested in the 3D, and, you know, I love to show that off, but, you know, it's not something that I go out of my way to use.
So I was kind of thinking about this today. So if you're playing Skyrim, there's not a lot of skill involved. I mean, there's a little bit of skill, but most of the time you can pause, think about what you're going to do, and then do it. So the immersion versus, you would never play TF2 with this thing on all the time, because you're going to not be able to aim as well. Mm-hmm. No way. There's no way your head is as adapted to just the mouse moving around. So, or any other first-person shooter. But something like Skyrim, where it's supposed to be immersive, I could see how, you know, something like this would... You'd do it all the time. Because what you play Skyrim for is to be immersed in another world, as opposed to getting kills or accomplishing missions. More than anything else, at least for me.
Games that are going to be more tailored to this kind of experience, and they'll probably even make games specifically for this device.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm excited about the leg unit that they're developing.
Omni?
Yeah.
We shat all over it last episode.
I could never afford that, but I'm...
Okay, so you could afford it. Where the hell are you going to put it?
That's what we told... that's what I said. If you could buy it for $20, would you have it? He's like, where am I going to put it?
Well, I think of it exactly like a treadmill. I think it's a piece of exercise equipment. Like, you pull it out, and I do my hour of exercise, but I'm doing it playing TF2.
Okay, you pull it out, you put on your special shoes that you have to use with it, you put on your Oculus VR, then you get your big-ass gun that you have to have with it, you strap yourself in, and then I don't know how you're going to load the video game, but you do that somehow, and then you're ready to go. How long do you think this procedure is going to take?
Well, I mean, if it gets me exercising and going to the gym, like, I'm down for it.
I think it would be less work to go to the gym.
Yeah,
but less
he
fun.
Just brought up a really good point. You're playing TF2, getting your exercise? That sounds pretty fucking dope.
Yeah.
Although you're not helping your team out at all. What's this guy looking down, then up, then down? Meanwhile, you're falling all over the place.
The footage I've seen of people actually using it, they look incredibly awkward. They look like they're having trouble.
Let's be honest here. You're doing this alone.
Well, I'm just saying the potential is there. I think I'm very excited about the idea of gametizing my exercise, just like everything else
in
the world.
If it's completely virtual,
that'd be
awesome.
Like if I can burn 1,000 calories and not think I'm burning 1,000 calories, I'm all for it.
Fuck yeah, for sure. So what else we got going on here? So I just read that Titanfall is going to be 6v6. Did
Max?
I bring this up in the last podcast?
About this, yeah.
Okay, so I didn't just read that. That was hyperbole. There is another game that I wanted to talk about called Evolve that was on the cover of Game Informer this week. Basically, I wouldn't bring it up just because it's on a cover magazine. It really spoke to me. The way I see it is it's a combination between the game Left 4 Dead 2, where it's 4-player co-op, and the game, the movie Predators, where you have all these interesting people, I think it was 8 then, working together to try to hunt these predators, which were trying to hunt them. The thing about the movie was each one of those hunters was distinct, and in this game, unlike Left 4 Dead, are distinct. So they each have their own special abilities, and you know, you might have your scout, you might have your heavy weapons guy, your assault guy or whatever, and your trap guy or whatever. Meanwhile, there's a monster that spawned at the same time as you did, and he's like a little pipsqueak, can't do much except for kill local fauna in this alien world that you're in. So it's running around, it's trying to kill these animals, trying to get bigger and stronger. Kind of reminds me of Aliens vs. Predator, the original iteration, where you start off as a face hugger and you work your way up until being a full-on alien. So you're working your way up, you're running through the jungle, you're trying to do this. Meanwhile, you're being hunted the entire time, so you got to do it smart. The payoff is you get big enough where you can start killing the hunters. And I think you get to a certain point where, you know, you could just go at them, and they're scared of you as a vice versa. And once I read this article and watched the video, I'm like, wow. And it's from Turtlebox Studios, who did Left 4 Dead 2, which, you know, that was a great game. So what do you guys think?
It sounds like a great concept. Like, I like the idea. You know, a game like that can be really difficult to balance, but if it's from the guys from TF2, then I think they have a good idea of what they're dealing with.
Left 4 Dead 2. Did I say TF2?
No, you said...
Left 4 Dead 2.
Oh, okay.
Did I say TF2?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I like the idea of it shifting, like, you know, the advantage shifting from one side to the other. And it seems like natural for a lot of beginner players to first join like the hunter's side, because that's not going to be a lot more noticeable. Like if you have a bad
player. You can get carried.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It seems like a lot more pressure playing the monster, though.
Yeah, and I think like the game hinges on the monster because he's a singular unit. So if you have a bad monster, the 4 people come in and just kill him and the game's over. If you have a monster that's really good, the 4 guys have no shot at all. So I think they have a tough balance.
But at least it's a longer game.
At least it's a longer game. And, yeah. And maybe if you have some skilled hunters, there's some challenge there. But
maybe you're playing a set of rounds and it rotates. I mean, that would be cool.
One of the concerns I have is everybody is either going to want to play the monster or nobody is. And where's that balance? Because you got to have 4 people that want to play hunters to 1 person that's playing the monster. It feels kind of like natural selection 2 that we were playing.
Yeah.
Where
nobody
wanted to be a commander.
Yeah, it's too much pressure.
So either that or 3 people want to be it.
But at least you don't have to answer to them.
Yeah.
You know? They could talk shit maybe in the post-screening or whatever it is, the post you know, post-game. Whoever won post game, but who knows?
Yeah, the other thing that I found interesting of it is when you have 4-on-1, it's essentially like having a multiplayer game versus a single player game, whereas those four people, if they're not working together, they're not winning. So it's right. The communication's there versus the person that doesn't want to play with people. He wants to go out and kill other people. So, like, that side's going to
appeal. More skill is going to go into being the monster, that's for sure.
Well, I think it's different skill. Like, a pure skill-based person would be playing well as the monster. But if you are a good communicator and if you have the social skills and the aspects to work together as a team, I think you'd be better as a hunter.
For sure.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like a great idea. I'd really like to see what this one turns into. I think, I don't know, we've seen it in Left 4 Dead 2 where people like want to play a certain side. Like, I think the undead side is favored a lot more. You see things where people will play as them, and then when it's their turn to play as the survivors, they just drop out of the game. Hopefully that won't be the case in something like this.
Wow, I didn't run into a whole lot of that.
I saw it all the time.
Oh, wow. Like, you played a lot more than I did.
Yeah, I played so much Left 4 Dead 2. But hopefully there's going to be some sort of balancing system so you get good, even matches. Because I've noticed that so many times in Left 4 Dead 2, where just unbalanced matches, lopsided, one team stomping the other, and just you cycle through players. And it's so much better when you can get a solid group of people that like stick with it. So, yeah, maybe like cycling through, like each person gets a turn to be the monster, and it's the best out of like all the scores, wins, or something.
What's
like
interesting about that, too, is you're learning the other hunters while you're a hunter, and then, you know, how they play, and then you go to be the hunter, and maybe you can use that information against them. And they also talked about having a bunch of different kinds of monsters, too. So you might be able to select something that more adapts to your play style, or maybe it's random. I don't know. I think it's really early, but from what they said when they play it, they're having a lot of fun.
Maybe they could do something even like a coin-based system where it's like, you got to play the hunters four times before you can play a monster, because that's the only way it kind of makes sense. So maybe you have to earn the right to play the monster. So
Yeah. Now, never pre-order, but I would pre-order here.
You're going to pre-order
almost.
This?
No, if it continues to gain hype and the discount is, and they have a four pack, you know, those four packs, that sells me.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times you end up saving about 25% or so. You know, I think I can swindle you guys into buying a four-pack with me.
Probably.
Yeah, if you got enough, like a game like that, it lends itself well to like a four-pack deal.
Yeah, more than anything else, really.
Yeah. All right, so you guys want to wrap this up?
Sure.
Yep.
All right. So, this has been the Digital Logic PC Gaming Podcast. Thank you for listening. You can contact us at dudes@dlgaming.net, dudes@dlgaming.net. You can also check out our website, dlgaming.net, Steam group, dlgaming, no.net. I'm Robert Digital here with Flopsy and Ender's Logic. Thank you for listening.
Later, guys.
Peace.